On Point, hosted by Peter Van Aartrijk. Conversations with interesting and informative experts on technology, branding, culture, social media marketing, and other great topics.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Peter Van Aartrijk, your host for On Point, brought to you by our good friends at Wells Media, which includes Carrier Management, Insurance Journal, and other fine publications. Our guest today is David Embry, founder and CEO of Mylo, a broker in insurtech with an intelligence platform, connecting small business owners and individuals with coverage for more than 100 carriers. David, thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thanks for having me, Peter. Appreciate it.
Yeah, so I see in your bio that you've got more than 20 years in insurance. Tell us about yourself, David, how you got to where you are today, a little bit about your career.
Yeah, the older I get, the longer the time goes.
Sure. Right.
Yeah, so I started out in my career out of college working for a mutual fund company where a very entrepreneurial guy started a 401k business that was bought by JP Morgan and ended up working for JP Morgan longer than that company. We grew that business from literally, I was on the team of people who started the 401k business from zero to, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue. And at the end, we combined that with Great West and Putnam's business. It became Empower Retirement. And when that whole transaction happened, you know, it was at a crossroads in life. And what do you want to do? JP Morgan wanted me to do some stuff that, you know, required going over to Europe and, you know, looking at build by partner around defined benefit to defined contribution. And I met some folks in the insurance space. I did some work for them for about 18 months. I met the folks that ran this big brokerage where we ultimately incubated this business. And the idea was there's an underserved market for Main Street personal lines, small companies, both commercial and benefits. And that the only way to effectively grow that business, provide a great customer service, was to layer technology in the process so that you could handle more volume, but not give up the sort of recommendations that, you know, the higher volume, lower premium clients need. And so they gave me some money. We incubated one of their operating companies, spun out to our own business, raised capital in 2018 for the first time. You know, COVID happened and our contingency plan, because it ICE's where our headquarters is, was to give people laptops. And that worked really well for 3 years. And we doubled our business every year consistently. And you know, today we are held by a private equity group called Group 1001. And between management here and the private equity, we own the business. So it's been an interesting journey and a lot of fun to get here.
So why do you think that customer is underserved? How did that come to be? So I hear that a lot about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just simple math, right? You know, to for lots of small businesses, and the spectrum is, you know, from a brand new startup with one person to, depend on who you talk to, small business can be a much, you know, larger premium number, you know, 50, 60, 70,000. Some companies look at it in terms of how much they make in revenue. But, you know, once you get past the like simple transactional bops, GLs, startup companies, et cetera, you know, a similar amount of work has to go into making understanding what the client needs, making a recommendation in terms of what coverages they need, what limits they need, what carriers have appetite for that risk that's presented, and how can you make sure that the customer, ultimately, individual or small business owner, is getting the best value given their specific situation. And so when we talked about, you know, technology, I think when we originally started this business, we thought much more of it would happen directly online. Lots of barriers to that, especially above, you know, single product line or single coverage risk with a single carrier. What we ultimately found out was, like, technology can make it a much better experience so that, you know, if somebody comes to us, you know, the question that we ask is not, what coverage do you want, right? That's our job. We should make those recommendations. And we should understand, because we not only represent the end consumer, individual or small business owner, we also represent the insurance companies. We need to understand what risk they want, right? So, and bringing those two things together for relatively, lower premiums in the, in the world of insurance, efficiently, so that it's a great experience. And most importantly, the individual or small business owner is getting the right coverage given their specific situation. Because ultimately insurance is the worst investment you can ever make, right? The best thing that happens is I spend all of this money and I don't use the thing that I bought. So how do you make that premise, good? We believe technology allows the facilitation of better experiences, better coverages for our clients.
Explain what you mean by we need to answer what risk they want. What is
what risk they need? What risk they want to cover, right?
They want to cover.
I'm sorry. Yeah. So if you're talking to an insurance company, like one of the say issues in air quotes that I have with everybody that says, oh, we want to embed our capabilities into a client, into somebody's environment. No insurance company wants all the risk that's presented, whether it is because of how much liquor a restaurant serves or where they're located, or past claims or the type of business that they're in, or the combination of the businesses they're in, right? One of the values that we bring to the table for the carrier, right, is to understand what type of risk they want to insure, right? Because we're not an insurance carrier, we're a broker, we're in the middle. And, the value that we bring to the insurance company is they get more of the stuff they want more efficiently. And we understand what risk or what types of clients they want, and we'll bring them those clients to them. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So what is this better experience? How does it all work? Maybe you could talk a little more about what you're offering on the platform.
Yeah.
If you're successful as a company, what is this, better world for who, that would happen if you're successful as a company?
Yeah, sure. So for lower premium, higher volume clients, right, we're building an ecosystem where an entity that has a bunch of small business clients, and we have these partners, we call them channel partners, that we plug our capabilities into their ecosystem. So think small business lenders, organizations that provide products and services like accounting or business formation to their clients. Like their clients need insurance coverage. And in fact, in some cases are required to have insurance coverage. And these small business owners don't necessarily, want to think about that. They're certainly not in business to buy insurance. And so, the mousetrap that we've built allows us to put our capabilities in the ecosystem of those channel partners, right? Ideally taking advantage of the relationship, the trusted advisor relationship they have with their client to give insurance recommendations and make sure that they have the coverages they need at a fair value for their client base.
Okay. So the customers, can you talk about some of the different kinds of small business owners that are classic insurance for you?
Yeah.
Customers?
So it's across the board, right? From startup bookkeeper, to bakeries, flower shops, people that are going into consulting, restaurants. We run the gamut of, sort of all types of small commercial businesses, right? That's part of our value proposition and why we represent a number of different insurance carriers, is that we plug our stuff into and offer them a wide variety of carriers, which means you're more likely to find a carrier or carriers, right, that have appetite for the type of insurance coverage that their clients are looking for.
The channel partners, is that sort of a point of sale? It's one of those moments of truth that people go through. They buy a house, buy a car, start a business, et cetera. It's just one of those things. Is that what you would consider part of the embedded insurance offering, or is that a different offering in my life?
Yeah. So when we came to market with our product, right? We didn't feel like we could compete with all the commercials on TV and the buying, you know, the ad word insurance to try to drive potential clients to Milo for insurance recommendations and ultimately coverage, right? We believe, though, that we had the capability to take what we do, right, provide insurance recommendations around coverage, carrier, and make that an easy transaction, and put them into other clients who have ecosystems who need those. And one of the components is insurance, right? And so we didn't call it embedded. I guess we probably should have, right? We were taking our capabilities and indeed embedding them in the customer experience of those channel partners to provide insurance options to their clients. And we've done that literally from day one. And I think when we started, and still today, when you talk to people about embedded, they really think that an online transaction, right, click one button and you'll have insurance coverage, is, you know, sort of the definition. And I would argue that like what we're striving for is to, if that's possible, potentially provide it. And for simple types of, I'll say insurance, again in air quotes, like phone insurance or travel insurance or even pet insurance, right, that's way more possible than providing a number of insurance carriers where you have to put together like things like BOP and cyber and commercial auto, different types of insurance products on our platform or even on the home and auto side, right? Yes, you can go to a carrier and bundle online without talking to somebody, certainly your auto, maybe your auto and home, usually never umbrella. And if you have any toys, you know, RVs, motorcycles, et cetera, never, right? And so to do that in a multi-carrier environment, you're going to provide a broader solution for those people. You can provide potential rates on the screen so that people understand what they did get. You can have recommendations on the screen if they want to interact with you. But ultimately, and we saw this early on, like people would click above the bind button,
mm-hmm.
and then they would call us. And so, you know, for the other than really simple stuff, they're ultimately going to call us. And so from the beginning, we want to not ask questions we should already know the answer to because we're plugged into the channel partners ecosystem. We should easily bring them over, give them something in terms of coverage recommendations and quote indications. And when they come to us, we should never ask them anything that they have already told us, and we should be able to efficiently complete that transaction to make sure they have the right coverage with a carrier that has appetite for the risk they present at a fair value. That's really what we do every day.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than calling customer service and entering or saying your info and then
again,
getting transferred, right, and they're asking again. It just mind-boggling how that still happens today.
Right. And so embedded, yeah, exactly. And it's exactly what we don't want to do. So when we say embedded, it could be like really simple stuff. You can do it straight through. You don't have to talk to somebody. But the vast, vast, vast majority of the stuff that we do, they're ultimately going to talk to one of our agents. And we want that to be a continuation of the experience they have that started with our channel partner, that continued through getting recommendations on the capabilities that we've embedded in the channel partner. All the way through to talking to one of our agents, all the way through to getting insurance bound with one of our carrier partners.
But people can find you outside of a channel partner, right? Or no?
Yeah, it's possible. You can go to choosemilo.com. You can find Milo's mm-hmm. Generic thing. We don't do anything to drive traffic there.
Right.
We don't spend money on SEO. We don't spend money on SEM. We don't buy leads. We mm-hmm. don't do advertising. Our sole distribution channel has been traditionally through these channel partners that we plug our capabilities into. Now, at the end of last year, when we spun out of the big broker that was initial investor in Milo, right, we believe that this technology that we've had pointed at our own agency, right, and we've grown the agency, you know, substantially well. We've sold to 60,000 clients in 48 states over, you know, we've got 100, give or take, $160, $165 million in premium. And we've pointed these capabilities at ourselves. We believe that other large agencies, mid-sized agencies, and even small agencies also could benefit from the capabilities that we've built to make these transactions much more efficient, both for the consumer, individual or small business, as well for as them. And so we've been talking to and have a couple of clients in beta that are going to use the technology that we originally pointed at just our own agency inside their own agency and breaking off from being a part of a large international broker allowed us to have more freedom to do that.
Mm-hmm. So Smith & Jones Insurance, for example, would have you guys behind the scenes, like a white label sort of thing?
Yeah. So we focus really on the, you know, solving the problem for the higher volume transactions and focusing really on insurance intelligence. Like, it's impossible for, you know, Smith or Jones, right, to understand every type of risk that's out there around what coverage somebody needs and make those recommendations solely because they don't do it every day, right? Or have enough access to carriers or even understand the different types of business, insurance businesses that these different types of clients or these different carriers want, right? And so they can use our insurance intelligence platform to plug in to, you know, the literally hundreds of thousands of quotes that we've done and, you know, the number of transactions that we've done over time. They get the benefit of that. For us, we get the benefit of providing additional scale for the same work in terms of the recommendation engines, et cetera, that we've built. And the only really additional thing that we had to build was make it multi-tenant. So if, you know, if that insurance agency wanted to use different carriers than we have, right, we need to be able to allow them to do that. We need to wall off their recommendation preferences from other clients, et cetera. And we spent the, you know, first 7 or 8 months of last year doing that. And launched our first beta clients toward the end of last year and, you know, are growing we call it, you know, our SaaS business. We actually named it Amplify because we're amplifying the Milo capability to agencies that aren't our own.
That's interesting. Yeah. Do you guys do any non-standard business? It's all admitted.
So we start with admitted. We've got a bunch of carrier stuff, but one of the other technologies we built on the front end is a traffic cop, so that when something comes into us, we can vet it to see if it fits what we believe are, you know, the appetite for those admitted carriers. And if so, what type of business does it go to? We get those to the subject matter experts that work for us. They also get the advantage of the recommendation engines that we put on the glass in front of them. But one of the things that can happen on the front end is that this doesn't fit an admitted carrier on the front end or during the process. And we have our own service capabilities and brokerage capabilities. So we carve that stuff off and get it over to them. And we're working with some folks that are trying to, you know, like bring the, we'll call it ease of use for excess and surplus business onto to our platform. So the answer to your question is small business, there are a lot of things. Part of it is excess and surplus, and we're trying to make that more efficient, although that's not the reason that we're in business. It's a result of being in the business.
Yeah, I ask because it just seems to be much more important to the ecosystem in the industry to have those safety valves.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially for a lot of things that anything to do with commercial property is very difficult today.
Yeah, okay. Yes, we do that. Yes, we have large relationships, right? We've hired our COO and president was at CNA and then Insurion. She came over. We've got lots of insurance expertise, you know, in the building. And part of the, you know, to use the analogy that you talked about earlier, if I send you to a voice response unit and you have to put a bunch of information, you have to go to six people to figure out who can help me, right? We've also tried to really automate that on the front end. One, that makes us more efficient. Two, it's a way better customer experience.
Right. So you've been talking about technology and with the 60,000 clients, are you applying artificial intelligence in any way to understand more about them and even make it more easier? Like, are there just certain things that you're able to uncover and then use in the future?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, we not only have we sold 60,000 individual small business clients, right? We've done hundreds of thousands of recommendations. And, you know, ultimately we're capturing that data. We're putting it in our data house, data warehouse. We've built algorithms. So when I talk about these coverage recommendations that we, or carrier recommendations, right? We have algorithms that say if this, then that. We're layering machine learning on top of it. You know, ultimately some risk, and I don't know how it goes, but some risk will, you know, will learn, and those recommendations will come from, ultimately artificial intelligence making that recommendation. Right now we're in learning mode, and I don't see in like the near term that we're going to put those recommendations on the glass anywhere without, you know, sort of humans looking at it, but it's definitely moving down that path. And, you know, to have a great recommendation engine that's driven by something that's learning from itself and getting smarter over time, you have to have data. And we have a lot of that because we do lots and lots of recommendations, et cetera, and then ultimately sell a lot of insurance. And so I think it's coming, right? It's part of what we think about. It's part of a component of what we're doing, but we don't think for most risk for the foreseeable future that AI is going to make the recommendation and bind the policy, et cetera. We would not be comfortable with that right now.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned, you know, you got started before COVID, and COVID changed things and actually made things, some things easier in life and in business. As you think about the last few years, and look down the road, is there a particular challenge you face? You're not alone in this space. I mean, you might have, I can't say that you have the best mousetrap, but it sounds great. It sounds very clear that people need help and efficient help, and they're sick of call centers, et cetera, et cetera. But what is your challenge, David? What are you facing? I think it's really interesting. You don't spend money SEM, SEO, advertising, et cetera. That's really interesting. It says a lot about your relationships and relationship building and sales teams. But what is your challenge? Number one challenge to growth?
Balancing, you know, how much money we spend, how fast we grow, to how much we invest in the business. So I guess that all equals really, how do we scale efficiently and effectively? Right, when we started and we had small volume, you know, we could get huge leaps in efficiency just by brute force, just by doing things smarter. Right now we, you know, we're focused on and have been focused on scaling, right? How do we get a single agent to be able to, one of our agents, because, you know, remember, they're not going out and looking for new clients. We have these partners that we're embedding our capabilities in, that we're assessing the risk, getting it to the right person here. We're giving them recommendation engines on the glass. So it's really about how efficiently can we get that stuff to them? How efficiently can they process that, make great recommendations for our clients and buy the insurance, right? So continuing to do that. Like 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, our average agent sold $35,000 in premium a month, right? Now on the commercial line side, you know, it's like it's at $170,000 a month, right? So the growth and the optimization gets harder the better you get, right? So how do we do that? How do we not spend too much money to acquire a client? How do we increase the the retention of our clients by serving those clients more effectively using technology, because all of those things lead to a bigger and profitable business. And the bigger we get, the bigger the denominator gets, right? The harder it is to do that. And so like balancing those things and making, decisions that impact our bottom line today, make the customer experience better in the future, and have a direct implication to how we scale our business is really the hardest thing we do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks for that. I guess just a couple of more questions on a personal level. In 24, I have a New Year's resolution to try to learn more from our guests about like what didn't work. I think, you know, everybody has answers. Everybody has their path. Everybody likes to talk about success. But the truth is, in life and business, we learn from missteps, mistakes, screw-ups, et cetera, in our career. So I would ask you, David, what was your biggest screw-up, and what did you learn from it?
Yeah, we're at the end. I don't think we have enough time for me to talk all the things I've done wrong. But the one that comes to mind is our first iteration of this. Like, we had a part of our original thesis for this business was that like this big carrier that we plugged into had access to markets. They had distribution, markets being insurance markets, distribution, a lot of insurance knowledge, right? And we believe that we could outsource the building of the technology so that somebody else could, you know, sort of build the user interface, and we could take the things that we did really well and we could rely on them. Therefore, we didn't have to have a whole bunch of engineers, expensive engineers running around doing some of this work. And, you know, we were really good at getting clients on the platform. The first iteration of what is now Milo exploded spectacularly when we poured a bunch of volume through it. And, right. So fortunately, my investors at the time, right, were, you know, super patient. They understood that, you know, what we were doing was, you know, because this was not this year or last year. I mean, this was 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so, like, they got that, you know, there were going to be some, you know, growing pains, et cetera. And, you know, the solution was we need to go out and find an engineering team so that we can control our own destiny. And when something goes bump, because it always does, we can, you know, have the people there to fix it, learn from it, and build institutional knowledge, you know, for our organization. And, you know, and it was very, I was very thankful that, you know, our investors had that perspective, and it was a hard lesson to learn. Like, mm-hmm. It was, you know, I've done a lot of things over a lot of years. It was soul crushing in that, like, you couldn't do anything to actually fix it in the short term.
Yeah.
But it was very important, you know, thing to learn, and, you know, and the institutional knowledge and how we've grown and brought people in and, you know, evolved our business and the people in our business over time and adding capabilities as our business grows. You know, could never have gotten here probably had that not happened, because I do believe it would have ultimately happened. Mm-hmm. And so in hindsight, I'm thankful that it happened early on. It gave us a chance to recover and grow.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. It's so interesting how the technology story, it's like, we outsource, we should have insourced, or we insource, we should have outsourced. It never seems like the first thing is good. Insurance carriers, you know, they built these giant systems of starting in the 60s probably, and they're still pumping out, they're still somehow working. But what I've seen with independent agents trying to connect with those systems through their agency management systems, that's just a rudimentary example, but it's just so hard to make everything connect when you have that old stuff. They were all about the insourcing, but I know they've had to outsource.
But just to be really clear though, like, I don't want to be an agency management system. I don't want to build that.
No. Right?
I don't want to be a Raider. I want to leverage other things other people are building. And, mm-hmm. you know, my previous life in the retirement business, we had whole floors full of computers. We have nothing on-prem now. Right. And mm-hmm. so the advance of, you know, the distributed platforms and, you know, all of the things that we have access to, computing power for, like, super cheap. Right. And mm-hmm. then having APIs and be able to integrate and focus on the customer experience more than just making it work. Right. We're lucky. Right. We started, you know, 7 or 8 years ago, really, on this part of our strategy in terms mm-hmm. of building it. Right. Because we didn't have to undo a legacy system. So I'm hugely sympathetic to the carriers. Right. Because they have to get there. They know they have to get there. But getting there is, you know, work that. Where you're replacing something that you know works, even if you don't love it, even if your clients don't love it, you know it works, with something that will be much more scalable. But, you know, you're going to have a lot of things that you have to learn. And that's just, you know, part of the evolution that everybody in the insurance space is going through.
Yeah, sure. All right, last question, my friend. Can you talk at all about people in your business life or personal life who helped you along the way, mentors that you might want to point out? I like this question too.
Yeah, for sure. So we have a recruiting program with some colleges that provide us with good people that fit a profile that we think would, have a success here at Mylan. We've had a very successful joint venture with some of these organizations to bring them in. And one of the things that I talk to these groups about when I'm down there is this, lifeline, which is essentially, what people helped you over time, right? Informal mentoring is what I call it, right? Not this, we're an organization, we're going to force people together. So you have a mentor. These are people that you organically, whether it was a coach or a teacher or I played small college football and the dean of our business school, a guy named Gary DeBush, made me interested in all this stuff. The light bulb went off because of him, I told you, and I'm going to leave a gazillion people out. So I apologize to the people that would hear this that didn't do that. But Tom Kamak, who started the 401k business, for whatever reason, he believed in me, right? And had a lot of success and growing that business with the belief that he had in me. And I was young, right? And then when JP Morgan bought our business, there was a guy named John Bauman, and John believed in me. And I went from doing a bunch of little deals to a bunch of really big deals. I could mention five people between this and the next one. And then whenever, this idea of Mylo came along, David Lockton at Lockton was a huge proponent for a long, long time of what we were doing and was actively involved in thinking through it and believed in us. And, like I said, I left 27 people out, but there are a few good ones right there.
Yeah. That's just an aside. Those folks who are directed to Mylo from the, you said the recruiting programs with the colleges, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are, what kinds of talent is it, the soft skills as well as the technical or hard skills people have?
Yeah. So we have a big internship program and we've partnered with colleges, specifically Ole Miss, KU, University of Kansas, Kansas State University, and they have a sales training program that is either a degree or a certificate that you can get. And when I first came across this through David Lockton, actually, at K-State, I thought, this is brilliant. Right. When I graduated from college, being in sales was sort of a dirty word. Nobody really wanted to say, what do you do sales?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But guess what? Nothing happens in business until you get a client. And so somewhere along the line, people figured out that, you don't train somebody in marketing or finance or whatever degree I got or somebody else got. For those people who have an aptitude and interest in, give them actual sales training, right, as a part of college curriculum. And build that curriculum so that you could produce people that, young people that are graduating from college, we could teach them subject matter expertise. We could teach them insurance. They're already technology, way more technology proficient than most of us. But they have a sales propensity. And that's, so we've partnered with the sales organizations of those schools, right, to get those kids into our company. Right. And we start early on. We go out, we do college visits. We actually teach classes. We do internships so that they get to know us and we get to know them, or they can talk about what we do. And it's not just the kids that do the internships here. It's the ecosystem that they introduce us to. And so we believe that's a big way for us to grow the sales part of our organization by feeding raw talent into this and then using our own training program and technology capabilities, right, to make them, really efficient and effective.
That's good. And because you're getting the phone calls, you need those people who can handle that.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, David, I appreciate good luck with the business. It's really cool. Have a good 24 and appreciate you doing this.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. It was a great conversation.
This has been On Point with Peter Van Artrijk, a podcast presentation of Wells Media Group.